Hello, Bulls fans, and welcome to another episode of Bulls HQ. Thank you for joining me, and hope you're all doing well out there in Bulls Nation. An 0-3 week thus far for the Bulls, so one more game to be played this week against the Milwaukee Bucks. But so far, the Bulls are winless this week, and like me, if you are a pro tanker, hoping the Bulls can really shore up their draft pick and sort of head towards that top of the draft, you would have been pretty pleased with the outcome of the results this week. So if you're like me, you're very happy in seeing a loss against the Lakers, a team that are sort of hovering around the same draft position that the Bulls are. So obviously we don't like necessarily seeing losses. We do have been enjoying the Bulls winning games this season. I think we all can admit that. But at the same time, if we think long term, getting the best draft pick possible is ideal. So a winless week and an important loss to the Los Angeles Lakers. And joining me today to discuss this week in Bulls basketball is Stefan No of The Athletic. Stefan, thank you for joining me.
Yeah, great to be here.
First time, I believe, on Bulls HQ, so I'm very excited to have you on, mate. And for me, getting back from a couple of days camping, I was expecting to see maybe some, you know, some trade news with Mirotić. I was away from reception, had no reception at all, and I was hoping to keep coming back to some trade news and pretty much got nothing, unfortunately. But what I did get, was a nice tank loss for the Bulls against the Lakers. And there's a few things that were concerning to me about this game, even though the overall result of the game is pretty much what I wanted to see. As a fan, we can get a bit irrational at times and get caught up in the games themselves. And there was a few things that I wanted to talk about with you. And being probably one of the best Bulls writers out there, I'm pretty sure you're going to have some good answers for me. So hopefully you're ready to rip in and yeah, I guess make me a more informed fan. I'm sure you're going to be able to do that. But the things I wanted to talk about today were the big man rotation, the point guard rotation now that Chris Dunn is out, as well as Zach LaVine and just his general game since he's been back. So let's start with the big man rotation and what you've seen from that, because I've got some concerns on that. I'll put forward my view a little bit later on, but I'm still of the view that the Bulls have a front court logjam, and I've seen that play out this week. But how do you feel about that?
Oh, I absolutely agree with you. I mean, Mirotić has been their best player. Either Mirotić or Markkanen, you could make a case for either guy, but Mirotić is only playing 25 minutes a game, actually under 25 minutes a game, which, you know, like, the Bulls want to play him more for a multitude of reasons. I mean, even if you are one of these people that want the Bulls to tank games, you need to play Mirotić more just to get his trade value up. And let's see what Markkanen's at 30 minutes per game. I mean, I'd like to see that go up too to like around, you know, 32 or 33. I know they're trying to keep his minutes down because he's a rookie and he's had these back spasms, but that still seems pretty low. So I think you can definitely trade either one of Mirotić or Lopez and still open up a bunch of minutes for these big men who have been playing amazing for the team.
Yeah, I mean, to your point, like against the Lakers, Mirotić only had the 24 minutes. Against the Sixers, I believe, he only had the 25 minutes. And against the Pelicans, he only had 25 minutes as well. So to your point, Hoiberg is using him pretty consistently in terms of a minutes range. When he is playing well, I guess it depends when he uses him. And against the Lakers, Mirotić pretty much closed the entire fourth quarter, played the entire 12 minutes. And that was the correct decision, given that Mirotić had the 14 points in the final period there. But the reason why I wanted to talk about this is not even so much about Mirotić. It's maybe even Portis has been forcing me to think about this more often. And Bobby Portis has been having a strong season, probably an underrated season. He's obviously still got some flaws, but he too is only getting like the consistent, you know, 20 to 22 minutes because, I guess, of that front court logjam that we sort of talked about. And to me, that was quite striking in this game against the Lakers, because he played, I guess, 70 minutes in that fourth period, I believe, but he didn't close the game. And I felt maybe he should have, because I thought he had a really strong game against the Lakers there. And for much of that first half, he was the one that really sort of kept the Bulls in it. But Hoiberg felt the need to play Lowry with Mirotić at the end there. And I don't necessarily think it's a bad decision. I think anytime you go to that particular lineup, it's a good one. But at the same time, it sort of speaks to the fact that the Bulls do have too many guys up there in the front court. And what have you made of Bobby Portis, and do you think he's someone that, I guess, should be getting more than the, you know, the 20 minutes or so that he's sort of receiving at the moment?
Yeah, Portis has not really gotten a ton of attention this year, but you're right. I mean, he's definitely been playing a lot better, and his three-point ability, I'm really impressed with how much he's grown in that. He's shooting 36% on the year, and he was not a guy coming out of college who was thought of to be a three-point shooter at all. I mean, he barely shot threes in college, and his first year in the league, that shot was extremely slow release. He's really sped it up quite a bit, so props to him for working on his game. Still, we know like he's a huge defensive liability out there, but he does need to play more to learn how to defend and just get more well-rounded. I mean, I don't think there's a good answer for Hoiberg, though. He just has too many talented guys. He tried a three-big lineup against the Pelicans, which I thought was really interesting, where he had Mirotić at small forward, he had Markkanen at the four, and I think Robin Lopez was the five, and that was just a total disaster. The Pelicans were able to shoot a bunch of wide-open threes because there were just too many big men out there that couldn't get out on the perimeter, so that's not really a solution. And Felicio isn't playing at all, so yeah, I think the front office really needs to help Hoiberg out here and kind of clear out that logjam. I think you're right there.
Yeah, and just so it's clear, I'm not necessarily being critical of Fred Hoiberg because I don't think he's got a favorable solution in this particular issue itself. You mean, you got four players there that probably on most rosters around the NBA would be playing 25 minutes a game. Certainly Mirotić deserved to be playing more than 25 minutes a game, but like just focusing on Portis, against the Pelicans, he only had that 14 minutes, but against the Sixers, Portis was really good. It had the 22 points, 11 rebounds, but only could play the 25 minutes. Against the Lakers, as I mentioned before, he was probably one of the better players and could only get 22 minutes, posting 16 points and 9 rebounds. So it's as much about Mirotić as well and sort of driving up his trade value and the fact that he's a starting caliber player that needs more minutes. But it's as much about Bobby Portis and maybe even Lauri Markkanen as well as it is about Nikola Mirotić. But for whatever reason, I found this, I guess, this theme, I guess, really striking to me in this Lakers game because we didn't see any of Robin Lopez at all in the fourth quarter. And I guess that's a continuing trend for Hoiberg, doesn't really close with Robin Lopez has been, I guess, more prone to using Markkanen and Mirotić there for those spacing elements. But I think I mentioned this on my podcast last week, but I think one of the reasons why you need to trade Mirotić, not only from a tanking perspective, is the fact that he's a starter and he's being used as a bench player and he's too redundant and the Bulls do have too many guys up front. So, yeah, for whatever reason, this was really striking to me in the Lakers game. But the other thing that really popped out to me in this Lakers game and just generally this week, I guess, has been the Bulls' point guard rotation without Chris Dunn. Now, I don't know how you feel about Chris Dunn, so maybe I'll ask you that up front, but how have you seen Chris Dunn and sort of where would you peg him at the moment in terms of standings or rankings within or among NBA point guards?
I mean, I would say he's probably, I don't know, somewhere around the 30th best point guard. So, he's like a fine starter. He's definitely way better than what I anticipated coming into the year. I made a mention. We're recording this on Saturday, and there's this college game between Trae Young and Colin Sexton today. I made this tweet that Bulls fans should really watch those guys because those guys have a chance to be dynamic point guards, like top 10 point guards in the league. I don't really think Chris Dunn has that ability, but you know, if he is the point guard on the next contending team, I don't think it's going to be like a glaring weakness or anything.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair. And the reason why I wanted to ask you that, because I wanted to set the table a little bit, because I sort of agree with you in terms of where I would place Dunn. I certainly don't view him necessarily as an average starting point guard at this point. He may grow to that, but at the moment he's probably on the lower end of NBA starting point guards. But even if he is at that point, it's stark just how different the level of Chris Dunn being out there at point guard is versus Jerry and Grant, and obviously the flow-on effect that has. So I know you were at the Pelicans game, I believe, and I would like to get your take on what you saw from Jerry and game in that specific game, because it's sort of a trend this entire week, or just generally every time he started at point guard this season. But the Bulls have really, I guess I'll use the word tank, but they've really tanked it hard when Dunn has been out at point guard.
Yeah, I mean, the Bulls definitely should have won that Pelicans game on Monday. They were up by 18 at one point. Yeah. They were up 13 in the last 4 minutes. And then Jaren Grant turned the ball over five times in the fourth quarter in both overtimes. Grant definitely lost in that game. And you talk to Hoiberg, And he gets this like very wistful look in his eye when he talks about Chris Dunn, how much he misses him, because it's so obvious how terrible the Bulls offense has been with Grant. I mean, the whole point of Hoiberg's offense is read and react. You move really quickly, get the ball down the court, and you make quick decisions. I tweeted out this video of Grant from this Lakers game where he got it across half court, dribbled 17 times, took like 16 seconds off the shot clock, and then just took a long two fadeaway that he missed. And he does this over and over again. Yeah. He misses, like, I mean, he just doesn't see these easy passes. That's the reason why his assist turnover ratio is so good, because he never takes any risks. And there's such a huge difference in opinion between fans who actually watch the games and fans who just look at his stats, because his stats look great, but I mean, there's no way you can watch him and think that like what he's doing out there is good for the offense.
And the Pelicans game is a really good example of that, because his stat line was really, really good. I think he had the double-double there, but even beyond his stat line, for most of the game, he was quite good. But in that last few, I guess, well, I was going to say 5 minutes, but it was more than that, given that it went to two overtimes. But over that last couple overtimes, and even in that fourth quarter when the pressure was starting to ramp up, we saw the real negatives of having Grant out there at point guard in those closing moments. Because when the pressure sort of starts to ratchet up, you can just sort of see that fear growing on his face, I guess, the way he sort of starts pounding the ball, starts making bad decisions and these sorts of things. And to your point, for whatever reason, I don't know why this has happened this season, but Jerian Grant has sort of almost put a trademark on the fallaway jumper. He's sort of trademarked that to a degree. So it seems like it's his go-to shot, and it's the only shot he can create is this fallaway mid-range shot. And I kind of hate that shot, to be honest with you. But it's been stark having Jerian Grant out there versus Chris Dunn. And we say that even though Chris Dunn himself isn't necessarily an efficient offensive player. He's not someone that can take care of the ball. He's very turnover prone. He has all these flaws, but even him at his current status is a much better option than Jerian Grant. But the flow-on effect from that is that the Bulls are also relying on someone like Ryan Arcidiacono, who I make fun of on Twitter. I like some of the aspects of his game, but really he's not really an NBA player, and he can make a few hustle plays here and there, but this is the sort of impact you can have when you remove your starting level point guard. Does Hoiberg have any options, other options at all, apart from relying on Grant and Arcidiacono?
I don't know if you saw this play from Jeff Hornacek the other day where he caught the ball at half court and then just like chucked up a three-pointer that missed by a couple feet. It got me thinking, like, if Hoiberg just got on the court, I think he would by far be the best point guard in the system at like 45 years old. So they really don't have a great option. Actually, their best lineup in this last game was when they played Nwaba and Valentine at point guard. So they benched Grant, they benched Levine, and they benched Arcidiacono. And I think they got like three straight three-pointers out of that group. They're really moving the ball well. I mean, all those guys that were on the court at that time are extremely unselfish. So they're just passing the ball around and getting the defense on its heels and getting wide-open shots. So I kind of like that. But, Cameron Payne, he's actually, like, shooting around. He's doing everything, I think, in practice except for full contact stuff. But, I mean, I think he's going to be coming back here probably close to right after the All-Star break. I don't think the Bulls are going to pick anyone up. They're probably just going to wait for Payne and Dunn to come back here.
Yeah, I think you're right. And he was in full dance mode against the Lakers. So he can't be too far away given he's up off the bench and celebrating pretty hard. So I'm sure Cameron Payne will get his opportunity soon, but do you think Jerian Grant is going to be a Bull post the trade deadline?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't think anybody's going to want to trade for him. Like, he has no value.
Yeah. I was hopeful maybe they could get something for him, maybe a second rounder, but that's probably wishful thinking, I guess. The Bulls went based on reports. You can sort of hear or read between the lines that they want to rid themselves of Grant to get some more minutes into Cameron Payne. But it kind of appears to be another season where they're going to have three or four options at point guard, none of them necessarily being something that you're going to write home about. But what has also happened with this point guard rotation and the fact that Dunn has been removed is we've seen a lot of Zach LaVine at point guard, and this isn't something that worked really well in Minnesota. And granted, Zach LaVine was quite young when this occurred, and he's not, I guess, a naturalized point guard. But the Bulls have been using him more so as the lead guard on the offense. So I wanted to get your take on what you've seen from LaVine at when he's been the primary initiator at point guard, and particularly in pick and roll.
So I've been pretty surprised with how well LaVine has passed in pick and roll. And I think part of that is just playing with Robin Lopez. I mean, he's such a great pick and roll player. He's a huge target. Mm-hmm. He's one of these guys who actually sets the pick. Most big men, they're not setting a great pick. They're just looking for the ball. They're slipping the screen too early. But Lopez really gets a body on guys. So even Jaren Grant looks awesome when he plays pick and roll with Lopez, really tells you about his value. As far as LaVine playing point guard in general, I remember reading some stuff from Hoiberg in the past couple games where he's actually said that LaVine is overpassing a little bit, and then he's compensating for that by taking really bad shots. We've seen him take a lot of pull-ups, a lot of long twos, contested shots. I mean, he's shooting under 40%. So I don't think he's like a reticent passer, but he's just not passing at the right times with other players on the team. And that's something that, you know, he just got back on the floor. So maybe that will get better as he gets a comfort level with his new teammates here.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I constantly have to remind myself that he's only played the 7 games since returning from a pretty major injury. He's still on a minutes restriction. So I always have to almost preface myself when I get into evaluation mode of Zach LaVine's game. But I guess the reason why I fall into this habit of being somewhat critical about LaVine is that what I'm seeing from him thus far hasn't really, I guess, deterred my original, preconceived assumption of what his ceiling is. And to me, that's more of, a second or third option, depending, you know, starter or non-starter. I guess it's almost irrelevant. I think he's someone that can play 30 minutes a game, but he hasn't done anything at this point to shatter those preconceived ideas that I did have about his game. Like you said, I have been impressed with his passing in the pick and roll, particularly with Robin Lopez, and for the reasons you mentioned there. But against the Lakers, in that third quarter there, for whatever reason, I thought he had a lot of tunnel vision, and the Bulls were really running a lot of things through Zach LaVine in that quarter, to the point where he had 8 field goal attempts, I think, in about 7.5 minutes. And when I checked the stats, in pretty much the same amount of time, 9.5 minutes, Lauri Markkanen only had the 1 shot. So LaVine had the 8 shots, only 5 points, I believe, and Markkanen only had the 1 shot in 9.5 minutes. So to me, that was something that was pretty glaring to me, and I'm not liking it. And do you think this shot selection issue that Zach LaVine has at the moment, how much do you think about, or how much of that do you think it relates to him sort of being rusty and trying to come back and just trying to get, shots up just to get into rhythm, versus how much of that is him, feeling himself and wanting to be the star, wanting to be the franchise level guy here in Chicago?
I think he's definitely forcing shots because of his minutes limit. And also, I mean, Hoiberg is trying to get him a lot of good looks to get him acclimated to the offense. Like when the Bulls started the second half against the Lakers, they ran the exact same play 3 straight times where Jaren Grant would set a cross screen for Robin Lopez to get him some space to come up and set a pick and roll for LaVine. And there's multiple options on that play, but LaVine just shot it 3 straight times. He shot 3 straight jumpers and he made 2 of them. And the third one was a really bad contested 3 that he bricked pretty badly. But, you know, like I really don't mind if LaVine plays bad. In fact, like I think Bulls fans should kind of root for him to play bad, because the Bulls have already stated on the record that they're going to match whatever offer LaVine gets in free agency. So, I mean, if he plays really poorly for the rest of the season, that's just going to hurt his value, and that's going to open up more of the cap for the Bulls to sign other guys and, you know, get him a lower contract or whatever. So it's kind of a win-win for the Bulls in that regard. And I'm right there with you. Like, I had a lot of concerns about LaVine coming into this season, and all the flaws that we were kind of worried about are manifesting themselves in this early stretch of games.
Yeah, and you raise a good point there. Like Zach LaVine being bad and being predictably bad coming back from a knee issue is, like I said, predictable. So we shouldn't be too hard on him. But at the same time, whilst it may help from a tanking perspective, I do wonder, and I could be reading into this, and there's no real way to, make this more substantive than just, you know, making it very skeptical on my part. But when I do see him taking this amount of shots, the 17 shots in the 25 minutes that he had against the Lakers, I do wonder how much of that is about him trying to establish himself as the man on this team. And like you said, the Bulls have been they've made it very clear that they want to keep LaVine around, that they will match. They won't necessarily, obviously, they weren't going to extend him prior to him playing his first game, but they've made it very clear that they're going to match in free agency. And from LaVine's perspective, he's made it very clear that he wants to be here and be the man. So I wonder how much about his shot selection is more about him trying to establish himself as the man versus just trying to get back into that rhythm. And I wonder what the flow-on effect will be. Maybe not this season, because this season is, I guess, a rebuilding year. It's a development year. But that hierarchy between himself and Markkanen, maybe not so much Dunn, but I wonder how much that's going to be, not a problem, but how they're going to figure that balance out. And currently, I don't think they've got that balance right. And like I suggested before, with Markkanen only having the one shot versus LaVine having the eight shots in that third quarter, I think the Bulls need to get away from that tunnel vision that they've sort of, I guess, been forced into slightly because Dunn being out at point guard. But LaVine, to me, I guess he's, I'm not necessarily convinced he's a lead guard. How do you feel about him, I guess, trying to be that franchise level guy?
I think that he can fit really well into this offense, and I don't think he necessarily needs to be the man. I mean, the thing that worked so well with Hoiberg's offenses at the college level was that it was very egalitarian, and that has been why the Bulls have been playing so well in this stretch when they've gotten Mirotić and Nwaba back. I was looking at the isolation stats the other day. So the first 2 years that Hoiberg was coaching, the team was around league average in isolation. And this year, they were like 29th in isolation plays. So they run ISOs less than almost every other team in the league. And since LaVine has come back, they've been running a ton more ISOs with him in particular. That's not something that I really like to see. I mean, like if he just like plays in the system, he's going to get a lot of open threes. He should be taking a ton of spot ups because that is where he's really skilled at. If you look at his shooting splits, the vast majority of his three pointers have been on pull ups, which are terrible shots. I mean, nobody in the league is good at making those shots aside from like Steph Curry. So I think he definitely is forcing things. And if he just lets things come to him in the system, then he's going to look a ton better.
Yeah, definitely. And from a usage perspective, a usage percentage at least, he's obviously leading the team at the moment since he's been back. Obviously a small sample, but he does have a 31.6 usage percentage, which is pretty high. And when you compare that to, I guess, previous Bulls and maybe even someone like Jimmy Butler, like Jimmy Butler was never anywhere close to 31.6% on usage. So Zach LaVine has come in and he's gunned really hard. And I guess it sort of gives credence to the assumption that he's more of a six-man gunner. I don't necessarily agree with that. I think he's probably more suited to be that, I won't say 1B, but maybe that perfect second option foil to a really elite offensive player. I think he can be in that. But the way he's played thus far, it sort of does give credence to the fact that if he was a six-man, he could come in there and he could gun and really, you know, be that really high-usage guy in the minutes he does play. But at the moment, like I said, it's obviously a small sample, so hopefully he can settle into this offense. But for me, I see him more as a Bradley Beal or CJ McCollum type player in the sense, not necessarily in the way that they play, but more as where they fit schematically in the overall offense in the sense, or the overall franchise perspective as well, as that second guy. And I think he's trying to be, or the Bulls are trying to position him as the Damian Lillard of this franchise, where I think he's more CJ McCollum. Do you sort of get where I'm getting at?
Yeah, I do, and I agree with you, but everybody on this team is being pushed up into a role where they're not quite qualified for just because of the talent level. So, I mean, I think if the Bulls draft a stud in the next couple years, or sign one in free agency, LaVine will drop down a spot. But for now, I mean, he's just sucking up shots that Justin Holiday was taking before, and he's certainly a better option than Holiday. So I guess I don't have a huge problem with it for now.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair. Look, I'm probably being a little bit too critical. I don't have a massive problem with him at the moment. And maybe I'm projecting too far forward and assuming the worst going forward. But it's just something I noticed in this Lakers game. But something that was also very clear to me was Denzel Valentine. And he had a really good game against the Lakers. And he's someone that I constantly harp on about on Twitter, more so because of certain people out there who are very buoyant about Denzel Valentine, and that's why I sort of be a little bit stupid about it online. But he's been really good for the Bulls for I guess the last 2 months. Really, his game's really developed. He's been getting more inside, and he's been scoring more inside and looking more of a threat, I guess, than just being a 3-point shooter. But he was really good against the Lakers. And what have you been seeing from Denzel, I guess, the last maybe sort of, let's call it, 4 weeks?
So we got to timestamp this part so we can tell CB Fred what part to stick to, right?
Yeah, maybe. Maybe I won't let him know. Maybe he'll find out organically.
So yeah, Valentine, he's been pretty good this last stretch of games. He really saved the Bulls in this Lakers game, keeping it close. I think that he has gotten very talented at taking these tough pull-up threes that I was just criticizing LaVine for. I was looking the other day and he had one of the best percentages in the league. So that's good. He still like tries to scoop everything from everywhere. He got stuffed on one of those in this game. So it's good or bad. I know Fred mentioned his CB Fred, not Fred Hoiberg, mentioned how good of a rebounder Valentine is. I think he doesn't get enough credit for that. Yeah, he's excellent rebounder. So he's doing a lot of little things that are helping the Bulls win. I think his defense is still horrendous, though. So that's always going to be difficult to overcome.
Yeah, certainly. And he had the 11 rebounds against the Lakers. So he definitely rebounded the ball strongly there, had the 4 assists as well, and had 4 three-pointers. And the Bulls hit 7 three-pointers in that final period against the Lakers and really got back from that 12-point deficit because of that shooting. And Valentine's a big part of that. You mentioned his pull-up threes. And I feel like his pull-up threes are different to Zach LaVine's in the sense that Valentine's are coming more in transition and he pulls up quite nicely and when he's got some wide open room there. And I'm pretty confident every time he does that. I never understand why Stacey King is always on him for that, even if shooters aren't in place. I think that's a good shot for someone like Denzel Valentine, who's obviously a good three-point shooter. But Zach LaVine, to me, is more, I guess, pulling up in pick and roll. So I think there is a bit of a difference there. But I have been quietly impressed with Denzel Valentine to the point where I'm sort of warming to him being a piece going forward, not necessarily a strong piece, but someone that can come off the bench. But yeah, I've been interested in his development because I'm not sure if he will ever be a plus defender or even an average defender, but if he can be this guy that can come in and shoot threes and do a little bit on the offense in terms of creation, then I think he can be something. But I thought it would be remiss of me not to give him some props after that big game he had against the Lakers, given how often I am quick to criticize. So I thought I'd get that out there. So props to Denzel Valentine. But looking forward, though, and this has been something that I've been obviously talking about for a few weeks now, and I'm sure you have been over at your podcast as well, but Nikola Mirotic and the fact that he's still on this team. I don't understand why he is, I guess. I guess it makes sense from a tanking perspective to move on from him. It obviously makes sense from an actual rotational perspective to get rid of him at this point, but he's still on the team, obviously, and he needs to be traded, and I'm assuming you agree with that.
I wouldn't trade him for, like, nothing. So I think the Bulls are holding out for a first-round pick, and nobody's really willing to give that up yet, and we've seen in previous years that you really have to wait until right before the trade deadline for these deals to get done. So I think that's kind of what the Bulls are doing here.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair, and to your point, I also agree to that. I don't think they should be just getting rid of him for the sake of it, but I just wonder how active they are being, and obviously we don't know that for sure. But I guess the results stand to this as well. I guess they've started to cool off now that Mirotic has himself, I guess, cooled off to a degree. That they've still lost the 3 straight games here, which is good from a tanking perspective, even with Mirotic in and playing well, even if hasn't been supernova like he was previously. But I sort of wonder why he's still on the roster, and this is really bad of me to think this, but obviously, when DeMarcus Cousins went down yesterday with the torn Achilles there, and whilst that was terrible to see, and DeMarcus was obviously having a huge season, pretty quickly after the injury happened, my thoughts quickly moved to trading Mirotić to New Orleans, which is kind of a sick thing to actually think about when you think about it. But that's where my brain turned to. So do you think there is a synergy there between the Bulls and the Pelicans in terms of being potential trade partners, and maybe in the last minute here, maybe sending off Mirotić to New Orleans instead of maybe the Utah Jazz or the Detroit Pistons, which have been, I guess, two rumored clubs that have probably been more interested in Mirotić than any others?
Yeah, I definitely think that could work. I live in New Orleans, so I follow the Pelicans somewhat closely, and they've been a really interesting team. I think they're pretty talented up front, but they have absolutely no depth. So any players they can get in there are good. Their cap sheet, I don't have it in front of me or anything, but I know that they are very tight, and ownership is also like really cheap. So they would love to unload some contracts. I don't know what assets they have as far as future picks, but I'm sure they could come to some sort of agreement, maybe get Omer Sheik back in a Bulls uniform, although he is pretty close to medical retirement from what I hear. But I think, yeah, that could be a team that would make it work.
I believe the Pelicans have all of their picks within themselves, in terms of they have none outgoing. The only one they do have outgoing is the one the Bulls actually own from themselves, or from the Pelicans, I should say, in that Pondexter trade. So I think that second rounder is the only pick they have outgoing for quite some time. So I'm not too sure if they'll be willing to part ways with the first round pick, but like, it just, for whatever reason, for me, knowing what the Pelicans want to do, and Woj was on Twitter yesterday saying that the Pelicans still want to push forward with the playoffs, and I've, you know, routinely thought someone like Justin Holiday would be a good fit in New Orleans. Now without DeMarcus Cousins, suddenly Nikola Mirotić makes a lot of sense there as well. So it's just something that I initially thought about, and again, I've been expecting to record a podcast where there has been some trade news, but that hasn't really, I guess, eventuated at this point. So I wonder now if, for whatever reason, the New Orleans Pelicans become an option there for Nikola Mirotić and the Bulls. But we shall wait and see. Hopefully, it materializes fairly quickly. Obviously, the trade deadline is February 8th. We're not too far away from that, roughly a week and a half, I guess. So it's not too far away. But looking ahead in terms of the tank tracker, or just tanking in general, where do you stand on that? Are you someone that thinks that the tank is dead, or do you still think there's a serious chance here that the Bulls could get themselves into that top four to top five range in the draft?
Top four to top five, I think, is pretty reasonable. Top three, which is really where you want to be in this draft, I think those dreams are kind of shot unless they get really lucky in the lottery again. But, I mean, like, I think it's been really nice to watch the Bulls winning games recently after that 3-20 start. But if you're really looking for the long-term health of the franchise, I mean, they have to get, like, a top pick in this draft.
Yeah, and they're only one game outside of the top five at the moment. So the Phoenix Suns, with a 17-32 record, they own the fifth worst record, I guess, at this point in the tankathon standing. So the Bulls are only one game behind there, and only two games behind the Dallas Mavericks there for the fourth spot. So it's not inconceivable to think that they could potentially get back into that top four or five range. There's been reports that the Suns are going to be pretty active in free agency and to really, I guess, move forward with their rebuild and try to speed things up. So they're not necessarily going to be a team, I don't think, that's going to be actively tanking for that top pick. And the Dallas Mavericks as well, they've never been a team that actively tanked, not with Rick Carlisle around and his ability to, I guess, conjure up lineups that can be quite productive out there. So I think the Bulls do have that ability to get into that four or five range. But I spoke about this on the podcast last week. I guess you almost have to qualify what you mean by tanking at this point with the Bulls, because like you said, that it's probably unrealistic, unless the lottery balls bounce their way, that they're going to get a top one to three pick. I think that's unlikely, but they can definitely get there in the four to five range. So in that range, who are some prospects that you like?
I think they should go for a point guard. You know, as I said at the top of the show, Trae Young and Colin Sexton, I love both of those guys. And this is such an important position in Hoiberg's system. You know, I like Dunn. I like that he plays with a lot of pace. But we've talked about this, Will and I have talked about this on our podcast. He's really not a Hoiberg-style point guard in that ISU mold. So I think that either of those other guys would be a much better fit. And maybe you could put Dunn off the ball as a shooting guard if he continues to develop. But I don't think that Dunn should preclude the Bulls from taking one of those guys. And I think that one of them will be available with like a 5 or 6 pick.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair. And I certainly agree that Dunn shouldn't preclude the Bulls from taking a point guard. This is the first year of the rebuild. This is the first, I guess, the first draft after the rebuild has sort of commenced. So they shouldn't be drafting for fit at all. They should be taking the best player available. And if that best player happens to be a point guard, then that's who you take and you try to work it out thereafter. But it's funny that you say you want a point guard at 4 or 5, because I'm sort of all in on drafting a big man at that slot, even if it's not DeAndre Ayton, who is obviously probably going to be the best big man in this draft, or certainly the one taken at the top of this draft. So I'm pretty in on Jaren Jackson Jr. at this point. And the reason why I'm in on him is his combination with Lauri Markkanen for the next 10 years really is enticing to me. How do you feel about Jaren Jackson Jr.? I know you obviously just mentioned that you wanted a point guard, but if the Bulls happen to sort of fall into him there at 5, how would you feel about that?
So I will say that I've not watched a ton of him, but I know that Bulls Twitter has a love affair with him, that, you know, he can shoot the ball, he's a good defender and whatnot. I would say, so this draft, last year's draft was a point guard heavy draft. That was really the year to take one. This year's draft is more of a big man draft. And I don't really like, from a philosophical standpoint, taking a big, just because you look at the way the NBA is trending, and the Celtics have really proven this, that wing players, interchangeable wing players, are by far the most valuable position, and that is really the direction of the league going forward. If you take a guy like, let's say, Mo Bamba, who is like very, very much just a 5, that guy is not going to have as much impact on teams, and you're already seeing that centers in the NBA just do not have a lot of value. So I'd really like to see the Bulls take someone. I mean, I said a point guard, which is fine. You still need a point guard, but some position 1 through 4, and stay away from guys who can only play 4 or 5.
I mean, that's fair. I certainly understand that perspective, and you make complete sense. And I'm not necessarily convinced 100% at this point that Lauri Markkanen's best position will be at power forward, given what you just mentioned about the league sort of, I guess, moving to more of a perimeter-based game and even 4s becoming 5s and these sorts of ideas. Maybe Lauri Markkanen eventually does sort of move into that center position. So maybe that's gives me some pause about taking Jaren Jackson Jr., but I'm not necessarily convinced at the moment about Trae Young and Colin Sexton. So it'll be an interesting one. Well, obviously, it's still, you know, we're still only halfway through the college season or thereabouts, so there's still a lot of basketball still to be played. But I guess my point is that there is still a lot of options here for the Bulls in terms of why tanking out this season makes sense. So I'm assuming you're looking long term like I am, and thinking the best cause here for the Bulls is to be pushing for that top 4 to 5 pick.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, you look at the record of this team in free agency, and it is definitely not great. I actually think it's kind of interesting. I want to ask you this question. You know, DeMarcus Cousins has been one of these targets that Bulls fans have really been eyeing. The Bulls have a history of taking guys with injury history. Do you think that they should go after him now that maybe the Pelicans might cool on him after this Achilles injury that has been very devastating for a number of NBA players? So, I mean, maybe they let him walk in free agency.
Yeah, I mean, it's an his free agency is going to be super interesting now that I guess no team will really get a look at him post-injury before free agency, I guess. So he's going to be out 6 to 10 months at least. So he won't be playing basketball again before he signs his next contract. So I think just generally thinking about DeMarcus Cousins as a free agent, it's going to be fascinating to see what happens, what his value will be. I think there probably wasn't going to be a ton of suitors for him in terms of max deals, but obviously the Bulls are one of those teams that do have max space available. But even prior to the injury, I wasn't very bullish on the idea of adding someone like DeMarcus Cousins to this young core. And that's not necessarily more to do with his skill set. I think DeMarcus Cousins and who he is as a player, I think could fit well. It wouldn't be the perfect fit under Hoiberg, but I think there would be a fit for him from his skills perspective. But I just don't like the idea of adding someone like DeMarcus Cousins to a young rebuilding team. And if we think about the type of player he's been in, and the, you know, the locker room issues that may or may not exist with adding DeMarcus Cousins to that young core, I don't necessarily want to see someone like him plodding along at center and not getting back on defense and the issues that may cause. And when you combine him and Levine and you know, if I was an opposing coach, I'd just be running pick and rolls at LaVine and Cousins all day and just trying to exploit that matchup. And that could be a real problem now after the Achilles injury. So we don't know what he's going to look like after that injury. And I wouldn't be interested in paying big dollars in a guy like DeMarcus Cousins. And how do you feel about that, though?
I would love if the Bulls signed DeMarcus Cousins just for one reason. And that would be, it would be hilarious to see him and Hoiberg interacting and him and John Paxson. I mean, I can't even imagine like how many good stories we would get out of that.
Well, I mean, part of the reason I think why Hoiberg has had a successful third season to date is the fact that he hasn't had that, I guess, hanging over him. The fact that he's had to manage any egos. There really is no egos on his team at all. They're all young guys trying to prove themselves. They're probably all coachable and wanting to establish themselves in this league. And even the vets on this team, they're not, you know, high volume guys that need to get shots. If you look at Robin Lopez, he's the ultimate leader. He's probably the leader amongst the veterans out there. So Hoiberg hasn't really had to deal with any, I guess, egomaniacs in the locker room, which I guess you could probably say he had to in his first two seasons with the Bulls. And I don't want to throw that back at him just yet. I don't think he's matured as a coach at this point to be able to deal with someone like DeMarcus Cousins. If he can't click with Jimmy Butler and even Derrick Rose and Dwayne Wade and these sorts of level of players, I don't see how it's possible that he could probably create a fruitful relationship with someone as temperamental as DeMarcus Cousins.
Well, yeah, that would be the fun of it.
I mean, the other fun thing about signing DeMarcus Cousins would be it would force Neil Funk to sort of have to talk positively about DeMarcus Cousins for a change. So every time the Bulls play against Cousins, whether it was against the Kings or now the Pelicans, they've often been quite critical about him. So it would be funny to see them have to sort of backtrack on all the negativity they've sort of sprouted along the way there when they've been calling against him. But I mean, they're not good enough reasons, even though they would be humorous to go after him. Then they're not necessarily good enough reasons for me. But yeah, it's a shame to see what happened to DeMarcus Cousins, but in a sick sort of way, it does present an opportunity for the Bulls, as we sort of mentioned before. So we'll see what happens on that front. But the final thing I want to talk to you about, and it sort of relates to a piece that Ricky O'Donnell just sort of put up there on Bloggable recently, is Lauri Markkanen and just Bulls fans' general perception of Lauri Markkanen. I sort of feel we're not talking enough about this guy. Do you sort of agree with me on that? Maybe it's just this rookie class and how good this rookie class has been, but Lauri Markkanen has been so damn good for the Bulls as a rookie, and I still feel we're not talking anywhere near enough about how good he has been.
I mean, I definitely agree with you that he has been remarkable, way, way better than I thought he would be. And what I enjoy, and Ricky has stated this too, is he just shows you something new all the time. I mean, you have to tune into these games because you don't know if you're going to see him throw like an 80-foot dime pass. You don't know if you're going to see him play point guard and like be the best point guard as he was against the Lakers, which is crazy to think about. He had a bunch of big blocks in the last week too. So every single game, I'm just so excited to see what new aspect of his game he's going to show off.
Yeah, and to your point, against the Pelicans, he set a career high in rebounds, so he didn't have an effective offensive game. He wasn't shooting efficiently, didn't make a three in that game, but he still found a way to contribute. He managed to get 14 points, but more importantly, he got on the rebound on the boards there, and he pulled down 17 rebounds. So that's something, to your point, that we probably didn't expect from Markkanen, and the fact that he's going to be someone that could really rip down 17 rebounds. Rebounding was something that was questioned about him coming into the league. Obviously, we've seen in the last week or two, him, instead of just making threes, he's been dunking on everyone. And that, again, showing off that sort of athleticism and that ability to work off ball. They're not necessarily things we thought about Lauri Markkanen. But in watching this Lakers game and him not necessarily getting the ball, I was sort of just wondering how good he would be playing with an actual competent point guard. And there was a possession there in the third quarter, I believe, where he had switched onto, I think it was Caruso, the Lakers point guard. It may have been, maybe it was another point guard, but I've got Caruso in my mind. But Lowry switched onto him, and for whatever reason, the Bulls just couldn't get him the ball inside the paint. And Lowry, I guess, isn't the best isolation scorer at this point. So even if they did find him, it's not necessarily a guarantee that he would have scored. But he's been so effective as this, I won't say this lead option for the Bulls, but he's been so effective in his rookie year, and he's been doing this playing with a team that for a lot of the year hasn't necessarily had good point guard play. So I sit here and I watch him, and I wonder how good he will eventually be when he's actually playing with some capable talent. And I don't know how you feel about him moving forward or where you see his ceiling for moving forward, but to me, the more I watch him, the more I'm convinced at minimum that this guy could be a high-level second option on a championship-level caliber team.
I think that he has all-star potential. I think you're right that he's being held back a lot by the point guards. If you watch the games, if you just like spot shadow him during the games, you'll see that he's open quite often where they completely miss him. And it's not just him. I mean, it's everybody on the team. Like Cristiano Felicio, a large part of his regression is because the point guards can't find him on lobs. That was like most of his offense last year with Wade and Rondo. And you see him go down to the G League affiliate and tear it up because they actually pass him the ball down there. So when he gets a real point guard on the team, I mean, I don't mean this as a slight at Dunn because Dunn has been great, but when he gets like a very, a better point guard with better vision and more willing passing, then he is going to look so great in this system.
Yeah, I agree 100%. And against the Lakers, Lowry had the double-double, the 11 points and the 11 rebounds. But of those 11 points, six of those came on back-to-back possessions, I think in the second quarter, where he hit back-to-back three-pointers. And before that, the Bulls weren't really actively looking for him. And then thereafter, they pretty much ignored him as well. So he hit back-to-back threes, and I'm not sure he took another shot in that quarter. Certainly didn't feel like it when I was watching it back that he got more of a chance there. But he only had the 10 shots in 30 minutes. But when I watch this guy play, and when I think about, I guess I refer to Bulls Twitter, but when I just think about Bulls fans in general, and they're obviously very bullish about Larry Markkanen, and they're talking him up. But even when I think league-wide, I don't necessarily think he's getting the respect he deserves and just how good he has been. But every time I watch this guy play, more and more I get excited about him. And I just wanted to put that on the agenda because I think, you know, for the second half of this season, I think we really need to start beating this drum a little bit more about just how good this guy has been and how much he is shattering our expectations. So in reading that piece from Ricky, I thought it was quite timely. So I just wanted to put that on the agenda as well. But look, I know you've got to go, and I appreciate you jumping on this podcast and joining me. It was a fun talk for me, and hopefully we can do it again going forward. I'll hopefully won't wait 20 episodes next time to get you on the podcast. Well overdue.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. Anytime you want to have me on. Yeah, it's actually funny that you had me on like right after Fred and Doug Tonis, who are great follows and huge Bulls optimists. You have like one of the most pessimistic writers out there, so it's a good contrast.
Well, I need that balance, but that's important. But I definitely need that balance after Fred, that's for sure. But tell everyone where they can follow your work and where they can follow you on Twitter as well.
Yeah, so I live tweet a lot of the games, and then you can just follow me generally at Stephnoh, Stephnoh. You can read my stuff for The Athletic. We have some great Bulls writers there, me, Will Gottlieb, and Darnell Mayberry. So definitely check that site out when you get the chance.
Yeah, and I would certainly recommend that. So I'm a subscriber there. And definitely The Athletic is the best Bulls content online. So if you haven't already done so, definitely subscribe to The Athletic. So Stefan, appreciate you coming on, mate.
Oh yeah, anytime.
All right, so that pretty much wraps up this week of Bulls HQ. Appreciate everyone for joining me this week. I've been saying it every episode when I've been closing this podcast, but hopefully there is a Mirotić trade this week. And if you are a pro tanker like me, hopefully the Bulls are able to secure that first round pick for this draft coming up for Mirotić. So we'll see if that happens again this week. But I guess the positive is there's only probably two more episodes where I can actually close with this sort of this rhetoric. Eventually the trade deadline will come, and hopefully at some point that Bulls will make a decision on Mirotić. But we'll see what happens in this week of Bulls basketball. A few road games coming up. The Bulls will be starting a little bit of a mini West Coast trip, I guess, soon after this Bucks game. So the Bulls will have three games against the Portland Trail Blazers, the Sacramento Kings, and the Los Angeles Clippers. So two teams there that have winning records. The Kings, obviously one of the worst teams in the league. So if you're a pro tanker like me, there's a good opportunity here for the Bulls to maybe drop a couple to some playoff bound teams and they should beat the Sacramento Kings, but they're the last three games prior to the trade deadline. So three games will be critical in the tank race, but it may also be critical in terms of determining what the roster will be post this trade deadline. So again, thank you all for joining me, and I'll be back next week.